The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
We saw dozens of cars abandoned on the roadway as we made our way here to the Bronx. An unprecedented flash flood emergency for all five boroughs of New York City for the first time ever. That water rushing in fast, just blindsiding drivers who were on the roadways last night. Many of them stranded in their cars, abandoning them after hours. Dangerous scenes playing out across New York City. We saw those play out last night. This was truly unprecedented.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, unprecedented. That is a good word to describe what went down. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Drew Mariani. It's great to be here with you again today. That ABC News report featured a pretty powerful video. I'm sure you've seen it by now, of a historic flooding that we're seeing in the streets of New York City, where the remnants of Hurricane Ida created flash flooding like they have never seen before. And my heart goes out to everyone on the Eastern Seaboard right now. I've got relatives on the Eastern Seaboard. I've got a sister who lives in the Carolinas. My brother-in-law sent me a text the other day. I should really send it to you, Maggie, so you can put it on our Twitter. With this storm also came really high winds and tornadic activity as well. And I sent him a text on my ride back yesterday after the broadcast. I said, "Hey, man, how you doing? I heard some severe weather hit your area." And he goes, "Not me, one street over." And he sent me a picture. And the side of this person's house literally was gone. Yet you could see the furniture on the second floor. The light was on. I mean, it was eerie. I mean, it was bizarre how intense that weather was. Giant trees felled. It was just pretty amazing. Hurricane Ida, of course, may not exist anymore, right? Thank God for that. But the remnants of it clearly are creating havoc as it makes its way through, you know, the U.S. New York City had historic flooding all over the city. I just think about how high used car prices are. This was just a random thought I had, right? All those people are going to be looking for cars, right? A lot of those cars, too, may end up on the market. So you got to be really careful when you buy a used car. But what a mess. You take a look at the stores, the homes, the tragedy, too, that goes with this. Not just the financial hardship and loss, but 23 people are dead. They are dead in New York because of this. You don't know the day or the hour, do you? Well, yeah, this struck right at rush hour. A lot of people were coming home and tried to go through the water, and their cars would stall out or, you know, just couldn't make it. It hit New Jersey, hit Pennsylvania. The city subway system was shut down. The city got more rain in one day than they get in an entire month. One day, think about that. In hours, they got more than they'd usually get in an entire month. Central Park received 3.1 inches of rain in an hour. It broke the record. It had been set just the week before, believe it or not, which is so weird, by Tropical Storm Henri, which passed through. So, you know, other places, you know, homes all over New Jersey were flooded out. Children had to be rescued off of school buses in Pennsylvania and Maryland, and you know, 150,000 homes were without power. And I said this yesterday. I don't want to go too off tangent today, but I look at what's happening down south, right? We saw Hurricane Ida bring in so much precipitation and damage, right? So much suffering in the southern part of the states. On the west, we saw Lake Tahoe threatened. We see fires just scorching, devouring the western seaboard. And then you have here up the other side of the coast, right? On the eastern side of our great nation, once again, historic damage. It causes pause for me, at least. I step back, and I know God's in control of everything. But I saw a report yesterday. I don't have the data in front of me. And actually, I didn't read the whole article. I was kind of late. But it said that, if I get these numbers right, that we're seeing more violence in nature, more natural disasters than we did in the 1970s. That was a pretty rough year back then. Question is it climate change, right? Are there spiritual factors behind this? I always throw that on the table. You can make that decision. Maybe both, right? Who knows? Maybe none of them. Maybe it's the cycle of things. You know, something to contemplate. Maybe I'll dive into it in greater detail in the days ahead. But we only have a few minutes here to talk, because I want to get to a really historic issue that I want you to be ahead of, because I think it's going to change the future of the country for your children. And that's coming up in just a few moments. But the vaccines, I'm trying to keep you up to speed on. Very quickly, I just heard, right? We know health officials keep, you know, pushing these vaccines. There was a survey, and they found that 20% of American adults, you know, one out of five, they're just not going to get one. right? We are just absolutely not. They're just not going to get one. I don't know whether you had a vaccine. Are you in that 1 out of 5? Say, no, I don't care. I'm not getting a vaccine for COVID. That's the lowest percentage of people saying they're not going to get it since the polling started last year. So it looks like numbers are changing a little bit. Meanwhile, this might give some people hope. Of course, the FDA approved the Pfizer vaccine, right? Pfizer is now starting to test a new drug. Check this out. They want to combat COVID-19 with it. It's called I think they call it, I don't know, the inhibitor is a protease inhibitor, I believe. And basically the drug keeps the viruses from replicating itself fundamentally, right? It's hoped that it also relieve the symptoms and it will keep the disease from progressing. So the first patient in a clinical trial analyzing Pfizer's oral COVID-19 drug. I'm sure many of you who hate the jab, the double jab, would have much rather swallowed something, right? Well, they received their first dose of the medication. Now, this began to be developed, I don't know if you remember this, back during Operation Warp Speed, when President Trump at the time, you know, put all forces behind getting a vaccine for COVID-19. Well, they announced yesterday that, these heroic people who are willing to go ahead and kind of be the guinea pigs here took the first round of these drugs. As CBS was reporting on it, here's the latest development on this oral vaccine.
Researchers at the Chan Soon Shiong Research Institute in El Segundo are testing whether these capsules might work as well, if not better, than existing COVID vaccines.
To have a vaccine that's room temperature that could be a pill is life-changing.
This oral vaccine is part of an experimental protocol being tested in healthy volunteers. While existing vaccines help create antibodies to the spike protein on the surface of the virus, Immunity Bio's vaccine targets that globe in the middle, a part of the virus less prone to mutations.
And the value of doing so is that we generate killer T cells.
All right, so we'll see what happens from that. There's much more to that report. The bottom line, technology continues to move forward. I mean, you take a look at mRNA technology already. I know a lot of people are nervous about that. But look how that revolutionized the advent of this vaccine. Some say it could be used maybe in the battle against cancer. Will we be able to do away with injections and maybe go orally with COVID? I'm sure a lot of people would love that. But check this out. Are you going to travel? Over Labor Day, I have the opportunity to hang out with some friends. I heard in California, they're saying this fundamentally. CDC was saying this. It's not just California. This is the nation. I saw a report yesterday that said they're asking 80 million Americans who have not been vaccinated. 80 million people have yet to be vaccinated. They're saying if you have not been vaccinated, stay put over the long Labor Day weekend. Do not travel, all right? So that's the Center for Disease Control and Prevention saying, if you're not vaccinated, stay put over the weekend. They're afraid that the transmission, you know, will begin. You see a spike after this because people get together, they're out, they're having a good time, basically enjoying Labor Day, getting a little rest and relaxation. So we'll see. We'll see whether or not we see a spike after it and, you know, where people's attitudes are when it comes to vaccinations. But speaking of vaccinations, I don't know how you feel about this. I love this idea, although I hate this idea. Okay? I love it, but I hate it. Can you do that at the same time? Can you love and hate? Let me tell you what's happening. I can't stand having a bunch of stuff in my pockets. You know, you have a wallet, you have your ATM, your credit card, your license, you've got all this stuff. I don't know how women carry pocketbooks. I mean, I like to be hands-free, and I don't like to have a lot of stuff on my person, and I like digital technology. Well, Apple right now, and I happen to have an Apple phone, they are working with 8 states right now, and they're going to allow iPhone users, yay, to put their driver's license in their phone wallets. Inside the phone, there's a little application called your wallet. You can keep a bunch of different things in there. So the FAA, when you go to the airport, right, get your license out, show me your ticket, you know, you need all this. The FAA is going to start testing these digital IDs in certain airports. So you just, everybody has their phone with them, right? You have your boarding pass, you've got your, you have your license now. Privacy advocates, though, are very concerned. And this is the hate side of the equation. How about strongly dislike? That's a better word, right? This is going to put some people at risk if their phones get hacked. So the company's partnered with, as I said, 8 states to roll this out. NBC was reporting on it. Here's what they found.
Apple said that a new feature was on the way. Apple's executive Jennifer Bailey, she took the stage at the company's big software show and said that users would soon be able to scan and add their state IDs and driver's licenses to their digital wallets. So just like they do with their credit cards, today 8 states announced and they will adopt this technology.
So we'll see. I hope you're in one of those states. If you feel comfortable with it, if you are saying, I'm afraid of being hacked. I don't want that to happen. I have my personal information there. I don't know. I hope my state's going to be included in that. I'm fine with it. I really am. I really am. Less is best in the world of Drew Mariani. That's so true. Hey, in California, here's a something for you to pray about, okay? And this, I think there's consequence for these actions on a spiritual plane. This is something a little bit different. In California, a court is being asked to extend the state's assisted suicide law to allow euthanasia. Now, we're having pro-life victories in this country, right? And I'm telling you right now, you are on the precipice. You are on the advent. You are witnessing history today. We are getting very close to seeing the destruction of our fellow citizens, the human sacrifice that takes place in the womb, soon come to an end. Roe v. Wade will fall. It's just a matter of time. I can see it in the air, right? It's looming. Of course, the battle will go down to the states, and that's a whole other story. But right now, I'm telling you, take a look at what happened in Texas. I'm going to talk with Dr. Teresa Collette about that coming up. But, you know, you've got Satan who dances with joy at the destruction of life because he hates it. He hates life. He hates God. He hates family. He hates you. So he tries to rob you of that child, and at the same time, he tries to rob you of your future, right? A court is being asked to extend the state's assisted suicide law and allow euthanasia. The difference, though, between these is, you know, with this, with assisted suicide, you know, the lethal drugs are self-administered. Euthanasia, right? And here's the difference, the nuanced. Somebody else injects the drugs. So, you know, assisted suicide, you press the button, you say, okay, I'm done. Euthanasia, somebody else will inject the drugs. A case came before the court, and a woman with Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, right? Claims that the assisted suicide law discriminates against the disabled because they're not able to self-administer the drugs. What kind of world do we live in? I mean, it's a bizarre world. I really pray to God that the court has some common sense. Should we play that clip? I know we have got to get to Dr. Collette, but maybe I want to. My producer Maggie found a great piece of audio from J.J. Hansen. He was a Marine Corps veteran. And his wife spoke back in 2017, and she was on Fox News, about how JJ was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And he could have taken the route of assisted suicide, right? Doctors came to him and they were saying, look, you know, you got a brain cancer, brain tumor. Sorry, there's nothing we can do. Everybody said it to him. But what we can do is, you know, you can go out in your own terms. And doesn't that sound nice? Oh, yeah, I'm going to go out on my own terms. I'm going to take control. He said it was torture. That decision was torture. Take a listen.
So JJ had a grand mal seizure in May of 2014, and it took him to the hospital. And that's when we found out that he had terminal brain cancer, and he was told that he had 4 months left to live and he should go home and enjoy the time he had left with his family. 3 different doctors told him that there was nothing that they could do. We were in Florida at the time, and then we moved back home to New York. And in both states, assisted suicide was not legal. And we're thankful. That's why we were moved to share our story, because it was not an easy road for us to travel this journey 3 years later.
3 years later, after being told you only have 4 months.
Right.
But you feel like you're raising awareness about this because there may be other civilians, but also veterans who have seen and experienced things who might be tempted to take their own life when they learn about something like this.
Correct. One of the issues of assisted suicide, when I found out about that particular issue, is when I learned about it. And that was probably the fifth month of when I was going through my brain problem. Initially, I was fighting. I was motivated. I was going to be have a lot of energy to fight cancer.
Yeah.
But then when I got to the fifth month, I said, wow, I was depressed. I was angry. I was upset. I was upset with my family. And then I said, do I just want to potentially end my life? Do I want to give this up? Mm. And I thought about this issue of assisted suicide. I knew that those particular pills, that by their law, the way that they have it in the states that they're trying to motivate this, is those pills are going to be right in front of me. They're going to be right next to me, and I could take those pills, put them into my stomach, and end my life. So in my particular case, I thought about that for 2 days. 2 days, wow. I thought about that.
With the assistance, effectively, of your government of enabling you to do that if you want to, where can folks get more information about what you're doing on patients' rights?
They can go to patientsrightsaction.org to get helpful information, videos. You can also visit the National Alliance Against Legalizing Assisted Suicide.
All right. So, look, there's a lot coming. We're going to invite him on the program, talk to him about what they're doing. It's a noble and heroic outreach and cause. I want you to be aware of it. You may be facing these decisions yourself in the days ahead. Stay with me. When we come back, Dr. Teresa Collette is going to be stopping by. I don't know if you saw that the president went apoplectic. Did you hear about his latest statement? I had a friend of mine, a former NBC guy, right? He was a bureau chief for Latin America, and it was a kind of a war correspondent. He sent me a text right before I was going on. He says, you got to check out what Joe Biden just said. I'll share it with you and more when I return. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
This is the Drew Mariani Show. Where else can you get news and issues of the day from a Catholic lens? Keep it here on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, a lot to tell you. Yesterday, Texas law. You heard, right? We talked about it a little bit yesterday if you missed it. Texas's law that bans abortion after a heartbeat can be detected went into effect, and it left the left. It sent the left, is probably a better way of saying this, ballistic. I mean, they're in disbelief. They're shell-shocked. They're stunned. What came out today was that the Supreme Court had a very late-night hearing right on Tuesday about this case. They voted 5-4 not to put a stay on the law. So it was a very close decision, 5-4. The decision has certain people, including our president, Joe Biden, good Catholic president, right? Rosary beads and Sunday Mass goer, right? He went apoplectic. He went nuts over this. Listen to this statement, okay? And I'm not exaggerating. I'm really frustrated, to be honest with you. And I'll be straight with you. I don't care what your partisan flag is. I don't care if you're a Republican, independent, or a Democrat. When you do what Joe Biden has done, and this is not political. This is about my faith. This is about being a citizen of goodwill and a defender of life. When you advance the culture of death and you do everything in your power to advance it, I say shame on you. You're going to have to stand before God, Mr. Biden. You're going to have to stand before him. And look, you're an intelligent man. You don't ascend to the heights of power in this country unless you have some monochrome of intelligence. And you know very well what you are doing. In a statement yesterday, listen to what he said. He says, I am directing, this is the president, a whole of government effort to respond to this decision. He's referring to what just came out, right? I want to see the steps of the federal, a whole of the government effort to respond to this decision, to see what steps the federal government can take to ensure that women in Texas have access to safe and legal abortions as protected by Roe, and what legal tools we have to insulate women and providers from the impact of Texas's bizarre scheme of outsourced enforcement of private parties, end of quote. That's a Catholic. Shame on any Catholic who'd say, I don't care if it's Joe Biden or Nancy Pelosi or anybody who would say that. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that we can terminate children in the womb. I'm going to make sure that the culture of death prevails. I'm going to make sure that everything I have in my hand, you know, the federal government, I'm going to throw at Texas. It's crazy. I mean, come on. I mean, just listen to it, right? Does that make any sense to you? Jen Psaki, the other day, she came out and, there was a statement that the president had directed at the administration. It was a little more tame. But listen to Jen Psaki yesterday. She was asked about this in her press conference. Here, she's representing the president. Here's more from the whole Biden administration in regards to what has sent, as I said, the left and the culture of death into shockwaves.
As the president said this morning, its extreme Texas law blatantly violates the constitutional right established under Roe v. Wade and upheld as precedent for nearly half a century. It will significantly impair women's access to the health care they need, particularly for communities of color and individuals with low incomes. It also deputizes private citizens to bring lawsuits against anyone who they believe has helped another person get an abortion, which might even include family members, health care workers, front desk staff at a health care clinic, or strangers with no connection to the individuals. This further isolates individuals who are facing this tough choice. And I would note, for those of you who didn't see, people who report, these private citizens could get up to $10,000 for reporting somebody who is seeking an abortion. So our focus and the president's focus is to reiterate our deep commitment to the constitutional right, of course, established by Roe v. Wade nearly five decades ago, and to continue to call for the codification of Roe, something that the president talked about on the campaign trail, the vice president talked about on the campaign trail, and this highlights even further the need to move forward on that effort.
Yeah, let's codify Roe, said the vice president, said the president. Let's enshrine this barbaric, evil practice. Let's make sure. The 5-4 decision has to be, I think, one of the hottest made right now by the court. The majority issued a 2-page decision. That's all it was, 2 short pages. Pretty quick and easy. But each of the dissenters, those who dissented, were Chief Justice John Roberts, who wrote his own dissent. He joined the other dissents. Justice Sonia Sotomayor was particularly upset, and one analyst said that her dissent barely resembled anything lawyerly. So here to talk about it is Professor Teresa Collette. She teaches at the University of St. Thomas School of Law, and she's also served on the Pontifical Council for Family and has testified before Congress many times, a great contributor to us here. If you want to check her out and the great work they're doing, it's stthomas.edu. Hit the backslash and go to Pro-Life Center. So stthomas.edu/Pro-Life Center. You can learn more. Professor, thanks for your patience. It's great to have you with me today.
I'm delighted to be included. It's in a very encouraging ruling by the Supreme Court, and it's fun to talk about.
So let's talk about it. I like bringing good news to people. What was the essence of the majority opinion? I mean, doesn't it have to do with a novel approach to having, I don't know, the state enforce the law by empowering private citizens to do this through civil suits? Give me your take on it.
It does indeed. And if you'll bear with me for just like a 2-minute con law
lesson. Yours. I'm all yours.
The Constitution, by its terms, does not apply to private action by private parties, with the exception of the 13th Amendment, which prohibits slavery. And there are still people, sadly, who are bringing people into the country and holding their passports or their visas, et cetera, et cetera. So there really are still cases being litigated under the 13th Amendment. But that is the only part of the Constitution that applies to private action. And what Texas did is they said in their legislation, the heartbeat bill, that the government cannot directly or indirectly enforce this law. It is purely a private cause of action for anyone in the state, and that's true, it is anyone in the state, who learns that abortion providers are doing abortions after the heartbeat of the child has commenced, which they require testing to determine that at 6 weeks. And if you fail to do the testing, you can also be subject to a private lawsuit where the citizen can sue both for an injunction telling the doctor you can't do this anymore or the clinic that you can't do this anymore, as well as the $10,000 that the president's press secretary mentioned.
Wow. Well, thank you. That was brought a lot of light to the issue. The president and Justice Sotomayor both said that this could easily turn into something like bounty hunting. How do you defend that position? I mean, the law allows anyone who brings the suit to claim, at least $10,000. Is that a potential problem? I mean, that's something that you're hearing a lot about today.
I don't think so, really, because the fact is that the people who will be motivated to bring abortion-related suit are largely the women who regret their abortions. I mean, that would be a very simple suit to bring, where a woman was not provided the information about the heartbeat having already begun and the abortion provider goes forward. I also think it's not uncommon in legislation, both at the national and at the state level, where you have what are called private attorney general's provisions, where private individuals can become whistleblowers or can become litigants against conduct that is so egregious that the state, you know, wants to make sure it gets enforced effectively.
Yeah. All right. We'll take a couple calls, too. If you want to join us, our number here is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149, talking about the SCOTUS and the Texas abortion law. Talking about SCOTUS and the Texas abortion law, they're ruling. The dissenters kept saying that this was unconstitutional, Professor, and I know you're a professor of law. I know it's a rhetorical question, but where in the Constitution does it allow for abortion? I don't know, you know, where they found that. I know where they claim they found that. But, you know, don't these justices know that, you know, one, it's not there. Everybody says it's bad law. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's now deceased, said the same thing. And why has this become a right? So let me throw you a quick softball there.
Well, because the court back in 1973 decided that it wanted to exercise political powers instead of judicial powers. And there is a long history. When they took the case, it didn't even involve the question of whether there was a right to abortion per se. It was about whether, if you are being prosecuted in a state court proceeding, you could move that proceeding into federal court, right, with the allegation of a federal right. So there's no sound basis, as Casey illustrates, because the subsequent case, the Planned Parenthood versus Casey, the best the plurality could do is say, well, we might not have ruled that way in Roe, but given that for 30-some-odd years, we just have to continue it because why on it.
All right. Well, let's do the sake of call. Monica wants to join the conversation as a question for us as well. Monica, good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Monica. Good afternoon. Thanks for calling in.
Yes. As I've said before, what is the most important thing in this world at the present time? And it certainly isn't your religion. It's the state of the climate and this planet. And there are too many people in this world.
Okay.
And it's about time you take your religion and put it in the background, because we have to save this planet. And limiting the amount of people that inhabit it, is going to make the difference.
All right. Well, let's talk about it. I'm glad you called. The professor will let you go first, and then I'll ask her a question.
Sure.
So go ahead.
You may not be familiar with the United Nations report that, in fact, says that population will begin declining in 2025. And they, in fact, have largely stepped away from the overpopulation claim and said that that's simply a false factual statement.
Well, you look around you. It's very obvious. There are tons of people everywhere.
At one point, Professor Simon, who is a great international demographer, made the claim, and I believe it was in the 1980s, that if you took every human being alive at that time and gave them each a quarter acre, yeah, gave their families each a quarter acre, it would only occupy the state of Texas. There's that much. What you're concerned about, I think, yeah, and legitimately so to some degree, is the density of the population, because we all know of horrible slums, and particularly in developing countries, where people are living in basically inhumane situations. So I'm really sympathetic to your concern about the underserved and the poor that don't have access to wide open spaces, but that's not a question of overpopulation. It's a question of distribution.
Yeah. And Monica, just to put it into perspective here for you, too, and I want to re-echo what the doctor said, there's a major myth, a great deception going on in the culture right now that you know, we are overpopulating. Countries like Mexico, we tend to think we're being overrun by the people. The fertility rates are falling, not just in Mexico, but here in our states and around the world. We know Europeans are losing people. Russia has entered a demographic winter. Korea and Japan are close to that. China was having such issues with its one-child policy that they've actually had to change that, and they're open to more children now. So, as the doctor pointed out, he was the Englishman who originally came up with that theory about population grows geometrically while food production grows arithmetically, if you will. And he was wrong. You know, his thought was that human population would grow in a number sequence like 2, 4, 6, 8, 16, 32, et cetera. And food would go 1, 2, 3, 4, and we would starve to death, you know, that we couldn't have enough to survive on. He didn't take into consideration natural disasters, wars and plagues. We're facing one now, the population check and a lot of other things. So we got to be open to life. And if we are, Monica, yeah, I personally believe, and you may not have a belief in God, that we are going to be provided for. The creativity and the genius of God, the creativity that God has given us, the genius of our intelligence and what's been written on our human heart has helped us throughout human history to overcome all sorts of problems. And I think we'll rise above this one as well. In fact, to the point of that, I mean, just take a look at agriculture. You know, we're no longer working fields by hands. Look at the machinery that can cultivate acres and acres of land and feed countless people. In fact, we throw away more grain in this country, and it could feed the world, literally, if you think about it. So I'm grateful for having us here. Hey, Professor, I'm thinking she was also angry just about the life issue there, too, and that's justification also for abortion. And that's some of the mindset that some people have for that as well. But we'll move along. We'll go to Peter in Phoenix, Arizona. Peter, hi, you're on with Professor Collette.
Hi, how you doing? I just want to point out that even if they were to make this law or, you know, codify it, however they want to say it, once it becomes law, it still has to pass the Supreme Court or the judicial branch as to whether or not it's constitutional. So, again, the fight will continue even if it's written into law. I mean, at one point in time, segregation was a law, you know, codified, and the Supreme Court overturned that. So even if they do try to make it write a law that says you can have an abortion, it still has to pass the constitutionality provision. And not only
actually,
that.
Go ahead, Doctor.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Well, I was about to say, actually, again, as I explained a little bit earlier, the Constitution is a constraint on government. It's not a constraint on private action. And this bill is limited, and it has been codified. This bill is limited to private action only. So the Constitution, at least under traditional court holdings, is not implicated here, at least at the federal level. The other thing is, the courts don't always get it right. I mean, you pointed out Plessy versus Ferguson, but remember also that the court upheld slavery in the 1860s. So it's.
But it eventually.
You are correct.
Slavery.
Oh, and the war.
My point was not necessarily the Texas law. My point was Joe Biden is talking about making this a law, passing a federal law.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's against the law, a federal law. Marijuana is still illegal, except in California and Arizona and Portland and a number of different states that have legalized the recreational use. So you have a federal law that says it's still illegal, but yet all of these other states have passed laws saying it's not. It's legal for recreational use. So the issue still would be debated and argued and fought. And with regards to the privacy issue used in the original Roe decision, I mean, you know, all murders, all rapes, all theft is conducted in private, right? I don't know of any public areas where you
actions.
Can go and kill people or rob people or rape people. So we infringe upon the
Constitution.
But we infringe upon the privacy of the criminal who's conducting the act. And say, you can't do that. In the same way that we're going to tell women that you can't kill an innocent human being, that it's wrong to kill an innocent human being.
All right. Doctor?
Well, we're on the moral principle. And interestingly enough, the Texas law specifically says that no woman can be subject to a civil action or any other legal proceeding under this statute. So that's one of the myths from the other side. Is that in fact the that once we overturn Roe, which I'm hopeful we will do in Dobbs, the Supreme Court case that's already been briefed by the parties, or at least by the state, once we do that, then women are suddenly going to be subject to prosecution, and that's simply false. It is not true. they have not historically been subject to prosecution. And there are a couple of law review articles that are pretty poorly researched that misrepresent the holdings of a few cases. Right. So he's the person's right, right? There is a moral proposition, right. And we are entitled to embed a moral proposition in our laws of this country. We did it with our anti-discrimination laws. We've done it with a number of in another number of areas.
Right.
But in this instance, the Supreme Court got it right.
Good, Peter. I'll give you final thoughts. I got to move along.
That was my only thought. Okay. So thank you.
Hey, thank you, Peter.
Bye, Peter.
I like it. Good exchange. I appreciate Peter's points. Professor, I only have a moment left for you, so I do have to change gears. But just final thoughts on this. What happens next with the law? It's gone into effect. Can anyone bring a court action that's going to stop it? I mean, where does it go from here? Will other states copy this? What do you see coming?
Peter was completely correct. I believe there are five state cases about this law in Texas mm-hmm. that are currently pending, separate and independent of the one that's in the federal court. So litigation is going to continue in Texas on this even. But I do think a number of state legislatures are going to look at this and say, that's a pretty good way of solving the problem. And if the courts don't want to hear these cases, that's fine. We'll leave it to private action rather than having government officials enforce them. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah. Well, Professor, let's do it again. Stay in touch.
I'd like to.
Keep me in the loop on all this, okay? I appreciate your insight and all that you do there at the University of St. Thomas School of Law. That's Professor Teresa Collette. You can check her out online, stthomas.edu/pro-life center. We'll talk more. Professor, thanks. We'll catch up when I return. Russ White will join me, and I do want to plug into one other thing. Banned by big tech, right? Have you heard this? A lot of people are being banned by this technology. I'll tell you about one prominent journalist who has, and what's coming. Stay with me. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Tell one friend about the Chaplet of Divine Mercy.
I'm not holding a small cup, Drew. I'm holding an extra large cup.
A bucket.
Every weekday at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that's coming up soon. Stay with me. Of course, get in line. Hey, I want to fill you in on what's on an upcoming book I think you're going to want to read. I also want to fill you in on something that's unfolding. You know as well as I do, it's no secret that big tech is censoring the views of Americans like you and me if they think that what you have to say is unacceptable. And I could give you a litany of examples. They're endless. Today, though, let me tell you what happened. Twitter held what is called what Twitter calls a space, which is essentially a public Zoom call, right, for Reuters to tell people about Texas abortion laws. And I doubt, for instance, that they would allow Abby Johnson on this call. You know, she's the former abortion clinic worker who left and wrote that great book. What's the name of the book again? I always do an Unplanned, and the movie that came out as well. I always zone out on her book. I want to compare her to Immaculate Eli Beguiza, who wrote the book Left to Tell. But Facebook recently decided it's going to change its algorithms, too. They're going to push down political posts. They're going to emphasize happier posts. And I wonder if they're going to keep doing that come the midterm election cycle. We'll see what happens there. But I was mentioning a journalist, a guy named Alex Berenson. He's a former New York Times reporter who put out a tweet about COVID-19. Listen to this tweet. I'll share what he wrote. You tell me if he should be banned. He says this, quote, "It doesn't stop infection or transmission. I don't think of it as a vaccine. Think of it at best as a therapeutic with a limited window of efficacy and a terrible side effect profile that must be dosed in advance of illness." I wouldn't disagree with much of what he said there. I mean, for that, Twitter banned him. But again, he's a journalist. He has a right to put forth, I think, an opinion and not be banned for it. You may disagree or agree with him. But Christians are also being targeted with censorship, as you know. There was a recent Zoom call. The Napa Legal Institute spoke with Ryan Anderson of the Ethics and Public Policy Institute. He wrote a book when Harry became Sally. It was suddenly banned by Amazon. They had carried this book for years, by the way. I mean, he's been on the show in the past. So he was perplexed. He's like, why are you banning my book? What's up with this? He had no idea that the reason was because, he didn't do anything to change the contents of the book before it suddenly became banned. Another person, at the conference was a guy named Carl Truman, a professor at Grove City College, same one that Paul Kengor is from, author of a celebrated book called The Rise and Triumph of Modern Self. And he was giving talks to a Baptist church in California over YouTube when YouTube suddenly started censoring him by claiming that parts of his talk were violating the community standards. And when the talks were posted after he was done, they were complete and without interruption. But Russ White is well known. He's a great voice in computer networking. He's an advocate for simplicity and privacy and decentralized internet. How's that? All right. I'm having trouble. I'm getting stuck here. My tongue doesn't want to move. He co-hosts The Hedge and the History of Networking podcast, and he joins us today. He has a new book coming out called Unintended Dystopia. And it's a book about social media's impact, which you can get this fall. So look for it. It should be out very, very soon. We were just talking about it. But it's good to have him here with us today. Russ, thank you for your patience. Great to talk with you.
Oh, no, it's great to be on. Thanks for having me on.
So I gave a couple examples of everything from books that have been out there to suddenly contents being banned to YouTube talks from pastors. How pervasive is this censorship? Does it extend to people who are involved in, say, Antifa, Black Lives Matter, some of these other groups that seem to have free reign of what they want to say?
So I would say it's pretty pervasive. In fact, I think what's interesting is that we tend to think of things like Ryan Anderson's book being banned off of Amazon as being the big deal. But in reality, like this more recent case where the Gold Star mother was banned from Facebook or Twitter or whatever it was, and they said, Facebook, and they said, oops, our mistake. We've reinitiated your account, although they did not put the post back that they had banned her for. So it's interesting because I think that we tend to think of big things. We tend to think of Ryan Anderson's book being banned. We tend to think of big names being pushed off of platforms, Joe Rogan or something like that.
Right.
But the reality is far more pervasive than that. These companies can say, oops, we made a mistake. They can ban you for 2 hours or 3 hours. Or they can just simply put your post way down at the bottom of everybody's feeds.
Right.
Or they can, put your post next to an advertisement that advertises for the opposite of what you believe in or what you're stating. So they have a lot more control over what's going on here than just simply banning people. And I think we're kind of missing we get wrapped up around the big bands and we don't think about all the little stuff they can do to manage the way we think about things or the way we see things.
That's true. And to your point where they can put you at the bottom of the list or next to an ad, that you're not necessarily banned, but you really are diminished and diminished pretty significantly. There's a number of other platforms that are out there. I want your take on this because you look at these Goliaths, these monsters like Facebook, like Twitter. I mean, I often say if Facebook was a country, it'd be the third largest or second largest country in the world because that's how many people use that regularly. We see Twitter, rising in its numbers. But there are alternatives. People got frustrated, and now, instead of YouTube, they're using Rumble for videos or MeWe for Facebook and Minds. How are they performing? I know there was a point where a lot of people tried to leave Facebook and Twitter and move there. But I'm just curious. I'm assuming you probably are familiar with how they're doing. Do people want to gravitate to a new platform? And does freedom of speech and lack of censorship, is it enough to motivate people to go there?
Well, I think they're doing okay. I think that we're seeing growth on Rumble in particular against YouTube and Parler, and there's a couple of others, Caucus Room, and a few others that are out there and seem to be growing. Disciple Media, I think, is another one. They seem to be growing. I don't know that they'll ever grow to the size of Facebook. There is this thing called Kai-Fu Lee's Virtuous Cycle, which is all about how you attract users by managing expectations, and you manage expectations by knowing more about your users. And these companies have had years and years and years of data they've collected, and they collect from all sorts of places, not just from the platform itself. And, you know, it's going to be hard to break that cycle. It's going to be hard to break into that. And to some degree, one of the problems we face here is that we don't realize just how much economic activity and things these and advantages these platforms give. So leaving them is more than just a matter of, I want my free speech. It's also a matter of, I want my free speech, but I'm also going to lose all my customers if I'm a small carpenter.
Yeah, that's so true.
Or handyman. And so there's got to be a balance there somehow, and I don't know how to get that balance to work out.
You know, I'm with you, Ross. I was thinking the same thing. The reach, the amount of people, they're powerful platforms, but you feel so handcuffed by the censorship, you know, that's there. So frustrating. I don't know. I don't know what you know, Christians are supposed to do. Are there practical steps that we could do to try to either prevent this from happening, to blunt it from happening? What advice would you give to people who say, yeah, I don't necessarily want to leave, but I don't want to be censored? I mean, what advice would you give to people? How do we exploit these platforms to our advantage, if that's even possible?
Yeah, that's actually a really hard question. So I think that largely what we need to do as a Christian community is go back to face-to-face and stop counting on these things for our businesses, right? I mean, if you run a small coffee shop, or you're a handyman, or you're a radio host, you know, don't count on Facebook to drag in 90% of your business. Figure out how to build a network, and maybe other social media sites are part of the answer to doing that. But I'll tell you, I think the bigger picture is to stop giving them our attention. Stop giving them the power that they have. I don't have Facebook on my phone. I don't even have a Facebook account.
Right.
But I don't have any social media sites on my phone. If I go to a social media site, it's through a browser. It's intentional, and it's time limited. And I force myself to, like, get out of that world and talk to real people. Get to church. Talk
Amen.
To people.
Amen.
Hang out with people.
Russ, I like you. I'm with you, brother. I feel the same way, you know. It's a terrible thing, but social media to me is a time suck. I mean, you can get lost in it. It demands so much from you. It's what my email alone is a time suck. I get so much email, you know, and I try to read everything. But boy, if I was to sit down and answer every email that came in, I wouldn't be able to do it on my show. I mean, wouldn't be able to sleep. Your book, Unintended Dystopia. I only have a couple minutes. Let's talk about that. The thesis of that. Tell me a little bit about it. Can we change the culture at all? Obviously, you know, we can't make it into a utopia, but we can make it, I think, a little better. Tell me about Unintended Dystopia and what you're trying to communicate.
So there's actually two books. One is Unintended Dystopia. The second is Unfriending Dystopia. The second book is just, I just gave them the manuscript, and I have no idea when they're going to publish it. So Unintended Dystopia basically talks about why these platforms are the way they are. Why is it that they are so bad to the human person? Like, why is it they cause depression? Why is it they cause relationships to fall apart? What do they do that makes this? And the basic thesis is they're grounded in a very naturalistic view of the person. And the naturalistic view of the person doesn't have dignity. They're a manipulable object, if you will. There's a great book out called The Nudge, which is pro-nudging, but the idea that we can control populations and get them to think and act certain ways for their own good.
Wow.
And so that's the thesis of Unintended Dystopia, is that these people started out doing what they thought was good, but because their worldview is such that they don't see people the same way that Christians or Jews do, they ended up building something that really doesn't really work very well. It works too well.
Right.
But it works in the wrong direction.
It's amazing what an influence and what a power it has become. And we're going to hear more about it, you know, from algorithms that, you know, limit content to censorship. Elections will be around here soon. It'll be everything from this pro-life law that passed to so many other things. They're powerful. I'd say if you're going to get out there, I'd like your advice. You know, talk to others. You know, find alternatives. And if you are there, you know, light a candle. Hey, Russ, thank you. Your book, if people want to get it, best way to do that is just online, I'm assuming?
Yep, online. It's being published by Whitman Stock. It'll be out this fall sometime. And, yeah, they can find it at Amazon, or as long as Amazon doesn't.
Right. Unless they don't ban it.
Or Ryan Anderson on me.
That is hilarious. Let's hope not. I hope a few people can read it. I'm looking forward to it. And I love the title. Great title. It's Unintended Dystopia. Check it out, okay? The author, again, Russ White. Let's do a quick search for it. Jot it down and pick it up. Hey, we'll talk again. I look forward to reading it when it comes out. Okay, Russ?
Yeah, awesome. Thanks,
all right, brother.
Thanks for
we'll talk soon.
On.
That's Russ White. Again, the book, Unintended Dystopia. We've got to leave it right there. I've got to take a short pause. When we come back, we'll change gears. Let's pray, all right? When we come back, we will pray. Let's pray for our country. Let's pray in particular, for those who have this power. And really, there is a power in these platforms. And they're affecting, as he pointed out, they have a very humanistic worldview. It's kind of an anti-Christ worldview in some respects. And when you have that, things aren't always that good. And we see what has happened. Depression, anxiety for heavy users of this stuff. We see marriages that have been attacked. And we see an anti-Christ type of message that is often promoted. And the message of Christianity muted. It's unfortunate. Let's pray. Prayer changes things. I believe in that. I'm going to do it right now. We'll pray the chaplet when I return. We'll pray for your intentions. And we'll pray for some miracles, okay? I appreciate this time with you. I look forward to it. Tell a loved one to join us too, okay? Especially if they need prayer. We'll pray for them as well. Stay with me.